The Sphinx, guardian of the Giza necropolis, is the oldest colossal sculpture found in Egypt. The Egyptians would not carve statues of these proportions again until the New Kingdom. But it probably wasn't the first Sphinx. At Abu Rawash, the head of King Djedefra, carved in dark purple quartzite, was found. Near the back of the head, you can see the beginnings of a lion body. It may be older than this one, though even earlier sphinxes could still be found. It shows at the very least that the classic design of a king's head with a lion's body was current in the 4th Dynasty.
All right, right out the gate, we start off in agreement. Yes, the 4th Dynasty is when you started to see the depiction of a human head on a lion's body like that. The Djedefra statue that you showed earlier, he's Khafre's brother, so it's like, you know, it ain't like this was 100 years even before. It was the same damn time. These two could have had this as like some family symbol or something. Who knows, right? Even the craziest crystal peddler on TikTok would agree that Khafre is the person who commissioned the head to be carved that way, so I don't really see why we're going down this road to begin with, but at least we're in agreement out the gate. Well, you guys thought I was going to start singing at you again? Come on now. Well, hello and welcome back to Dedunking. I'm Dan and we're going to go through this video of Dr. Mianel's that he just uploaded today. It's only about 5 minutes long and my kid's off running around with his grandparents today, so I have time and, you know, I got a chance to serve this meatball up hot, so let's do it.
Could the Sphinx be older than the 4th Dynasty? Knowledge of the geological history of the area can assist us. It could not have been carved during the Green Sahara period, which lasted from about 12,000 years ago to about 5,500 years ago. The Sphinx is on the Nile floodplain, and during this period, the Nile was higher than it is today. The Sphinx enclosure would have been flooded. That means it could only have been carved during a Desert Sahara period, when the area was dry.
And this is the kind of stuff that made me decide to respond to this video. This is very much a possibility being presented 100% as scientific fact. This is definitely not scientific fact. And as a matter of fact, the way that he says it right here, this could not be done. I want to show you a clip of what he says in the video I was actually going to respond to next, but then this popped up. But I want you to look at this clip right here of what he says about archaeologists saying Göbekli Tepe could have never been made.
But here's the thing. Archaeologists never said a site like Göbekli Tepe was impossible. This is made up. Archaeologists do not make pronouncements about what can or cannot be found. They find out when they find out.
In that video, he says that an archaeologist saying this cannot be is something they're not going to do. In this video, he's telling us this cannot be. And I'll get into the details a little bit here. They're talking about that whole area being a floodplain, right? Like being constantly flooded. And the Nile flood delta has been a huge part of Egyptian culture forever, as most of you are aware. The thing is that it depends on where the rivers itself, where the parts of the river actually went through. Because if it kept that area so constantly soaked in water that you couldn't barely move around over there, yes, I would agree with you. They're not going to be able to do anything. But if it does the flooding and then the receding of the waters, absolutely that area was workable. And there's a lot of models about this that are out there. They don't know for sure exactly where the water went and exactly what areas were the worst. There's tons of work still being done on this. And it very frequently is tied into the construction of the pyramids. Usually not the Sphinx so much, but the pyramids, it's very frequently tied in with.
That leaves us with two choices. Either before 12,000 years ago or after 5,500 years ago. But we can eliminate the earlier dry period, for a very important reason. In the wet period that followed, the river would have been powerful enough to clear anything in its path. The Sphinx could not have survived. Since the Sphinx is still standing, then it must have been carved after 5,500 years ago.
Well, this is a little confusing to me because the Sphinx is carved out of bedrock. It's a natural outcropping right out of the ground. Obviously, it survived whatever flooding you want to posit happened there. So, let they knock a few pieces off and all of a sudden magically it's just going to fall apart the first time the water comes by? This is a little bit of an absurd position. Furthermore, I'll point out here that, say, for instance, somebody carved the thing to be an equinautical marker, all Graham Hancock style, at 12,500 years ago, which personally I don't believe. But say that's what happened. Then that water could just chew all the pieces off of that Sphinx and off of that thing and whittle it down, but it still would potentially be there, right? And then they come along later and recarve it and mess around with it a little bit. And this is a very unscientific statement. This is really no different than me saying there is no way that the pyramid could have been built with pulleys and ropes and levers and ramps. It's just an assertion with really nothing to back it up, and common sense says that's bullshit.
Why is the head in so much better shape than the body? Ah, that is because the Sphinx is carved from three different types of limestone. The head is from what we call Member 3 limestone, and it is harder and more durable. The body is made from Member 2 limestone, which is soft and crumbly, and the base is made from Member 1 limestone, which is a petrified shoal and coral reef. It is of higher quality than the Member 2.
This is one of those things that seems to make a lot of sense, but if you scratch the surface, you find out it doesn't make as much sense as you would think. First thing is, limestone doesn't really weather the same as like granite does. The water doesn't erode it as much based on hardness as it does chemically, which is why a lot of it looks really weirdly chemically pitted, and you'll end up with all these goofy woo things about melted stones and stuff. For example, just really quick from an abstract of a paper about the weathering of limestone, a two-rate weathering regime was highlighted within building limestones. Cohesiveness and water uptake capacity were identified as controlling factors. There is no straightforward correlation between durability and surface hardness. Now, this doesn't automatically mean that harder limestone weathers at the same rate as softer limestone, but what it does mean is that the idea that the head is going to look that pristine compared to the body is a little bit out there. And that can also be confirmed by looking at the paw that Dr. Miano didn't show in the back. He shows us this paw, which looks all right, but then you look at the other one, and they've had to basically completely replace the damn thing. Again, it's a chemical thing that happens with limestone. So the three different kinds here matters to a degree, but not to the degree that is implied in the video.
Archaeologists are divided on whether the masonry around the Sphinx was original to the sculpture or not. I am in the camp that thinks it was original. Geologist Robert Schneiker and I are working on an academic paper about this. I will share the contents with you when we are done, but suffice it to say for now, we think the lower quality limestone of the Sphinx's body had a casing, just as the lower quality limestone of the temples had a casing.
This is another position that, in my opinion, looks okay on its surface, but it falls apart under scrutiny. It seems like the Egyptians were hellbent on making sure that that outcropping of rock was used for the Sphinx. They didn't just bring in harder limestone to store up the areas that they wanted to build any old particular way. They cut that piece of rock from the dirt, made sure that it was pointed in the direction they wanted, carved it the way that they wanted it, and they used that rock. It seems really weird to me that they would add things to it as part of that project. Now, as a part of a salvaging project, a reconstruction project, preservation, yeah, okay, I could see that. But in the initial construction, in my opinion, they would have just built something on the site. If that was the case, why would they use the outcropping of rock? Especially when you know a lot about ancient Egyptian religion, where that outcropping of rock thing that shows up in every pyramid. They didn't just add a rock at the bottom of those pyramids. They made sure there was an outcropping of bedrock in the bottom of those pyramids. To me, it is the outcropping of bedrock is a very important thing. I don't think that they would have made it half outcropping and half not. It was either all or nothing, in my opinion. I could be wrong there, but to me it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Many people have noticed that the Sphinx's head is not in proper proportion to the body, and some have supposed that the Sphinx may originally have had a bigger, non-human head that fit the body properly, but that it got recarved later and now it's too small. My two immediate thoughts about this are, one, the Sphinx look, with a human head on a lion's body, seems already to have been standard by the time of the Old Kingdom.
Oh, it seems to have been well established by then. Well, that sounds like I'm watching Ancient Apocalypse, especially considering that it wasn't well established by the Old Kingdom. It showed up contemporary with the construction of the Sphinx. So like I said earlier, this well could have been a family thing, like a family symbol, and they just chose, hey man, you know what, I'm going to put our family's thing on this, now it's going to be Khafre's Sphinx forever and ever and ever, and nobody can do anything about it. And your argument against it is, well, at that point in history, they put heads on lions, so therefore they put heads on lions. They must have made this right then. It's impossible that they could have looked at a lion and said, hey, the new convention is putting our heads on those things. See that lion statue over there? My lion statue. Your argument doesn't address that at all.
And two, if the small head was thought to be good enough at a later time, why couldn't it have been thought to be good enough originally?
And just like my opinion that it makes sense for them to use bricks in the reconstruction and the preservation, but not in the initial construction, it makes sense that they would be more concerned with the aesthetic appearance of it in the original construction than they would be if Khafre hijacked it by having his head recarved on there. The original thing would be intended to look specifically like a lion in this hypothesis that Khafre stole it, right? So in that point, it would be more important that it looked proper. But if Khafre is stealing it, really, he doesn't care if the head's the right size or not, more as much as he cares that you can see that it's him. It's my Sphinx now. So just like, you know, there's a difference, an ideology between reconstructing it and the original construction, there's a difference in the ideology between the original construction and the hijacking of it. So asking that question as to why is this okay here and why is that not okay here, it doesn't really make a lot of sense because there's two very different motivations according to this hypothesis. So once again, in my opinion, you are not addressing any of the arguments that are usually made here. You're kind of like looking past it.
Anyway, if the head had once been that of a lion or a jackal, as some have suggested, it would have been too heavy on the front, and the neck would not have been able to support it.
Are you serious about this? I mean, there's a lot of ways that that thing could have been carved and had a lion's head or a jackal's head or whatever on there and not fallen down. Like, you have to basically say it had to be exactly like this, and the limestone had to be exactly this hardness, and blah, 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 and this way, and you have to make a lot of assumptions about this head that you claim didn't even exist. So it's pretty difficult for me to, like, consider this science. You're just like, oh, you know, I don't think it could have happened because too big. Well, okay, fine. What if it was half again smaller? Somewhere between that, the size of that big lion's head that all the pyramidiots like and the Khafre's head that we got there. Then where are we at?
Robert Schneiker has observed that the Sphinx is crisscrossed with bedrock fractures, and the head was carved from a fracture-free section of limited scope. The facial features were designed to fall on natural bedding planes within the limestone. The fractures prevented the sculptors from making it any larger.
Well, I definitely look forward to seeing the paper when it comes out, but I have to say that I'm pretty skeptical of the ability to know exactly where the fissures fell on pieces of rock that were taken off. I mean, you know, you take a split in like a piece of wood, for example, and that split could be running just along the corner and pop right off, or it could run right down the middle of that board. And if you cut it off and just have this tiny little section of it, you can't really tell me how that thing ran down the rest of that wood. I'm going to go out on a limb and say they got kind of the same issue here, that rock fissure could go 101 different ways, and if you cut the other piece of rock off so you can't even tell what you got on that part, well, now you're just spitballing and kind of guessing. I mean, I'm sure there is some science to it, but again, I'll be interested in seeing the paper. I'm highly skeptical of this claim, and I do note that this kind of stuff always seems to come up in situations like this. I don't see scientists trying to tell me how rock fissures will form in pieces of discarded sculpture, except for in situations when they're trying to debunk claims of woo.
So it is more accurate to say that the body is too big for the head than that the head is too small for the body. Therefore, an explanation is needed for the size of the body. Huge fissures can be seen in the members' 1 and 2 limestone layers. A big one runs right across the thinnest part of the Sphinx's body. When the Egyptians discovered this, they realized they couldn't finish off the rear of the Sphinx as planned, so they elongated the body to compensate for it.
Now keep in mind that this entire time, right down to him saying that this is where the Egyptians originally intended to carve the Sphinx, but they couldn't because of this, so therefore they did it this other way that wasn't their original plans, he doesn't know this for a fact. It's not even published stuff. This is so hypothetical, it's not even a published paper yet. So it is kind of disconcerting to me that it's being presented as factual in a video that's debunking pseudoscience, no less. Because at the point when you are presenting evidence and an opinion as scientific fact, and you are an educator, a science educator in this area of science, well, you blur the lines between fact and opinion. And you do so very heavily in this video, I have to point out. It's kind of messed up because somebody could easily walk away from here with the impression that there's only a few things here that you think is your opinion, like the blocks on the Sphinx. But this part, you don't say this is your opinion. You make it pretty clear that this is what it is. But that's not what it is. This is very much your opinion. We do not know for sure what they originally intended the Sphinx to even look like. Yeah, there's fissures in it. That doesn't mean that they would have done it this particular way. They could have done 101 different things, right? They could have built a pyramid out of it. Apparently, they kind of like those things. So why didn't they go that way? There's 101 different things we could be asking here instead of just saying this is how it is. But Dr. Miano's not doing that. He is basically implying heavily this is how it is.
On the positive side, this allowed them to carve the lower sections of the rear paws out of the higher quality Member 1 limestone. When they covered the body with masonry, they filled and covered the fissure as well.
And at the end, he gives us a factual statement about them filling in the fissure, but it's been wined in with his opinion numerous times that were all declared as facts. So we end up with this thing that's kind of a mess of real data and Dr. Miano's opinion all presented as fact, except for a couple of small points. Now, there's a number of reasons I find this problematic, but the number one reason, in my opinion, would be that the Sphinx is basically a gateway drug to the whole pyramidiate sphere of questioning science, questioning archaeology, and videos like that don't do anything to address the nuanced takes on the Sphinx that somebody like myself has. It's not all crazy pyramidiate alien with it. I don't think that it shot electricity. I don't think it was even built in 10,500 BC. I think it was built to emulate that time. I think that was Zeptepi according to the Egyptian mythology and religion. Anyway, it doesn't address anything like that. It won't address anybody like myself or even a full-fledged crazy pyramidiate. Dr. Miano's arguments here basically only address his followers. They only reach people that like what he's putting down already. People like myself watch this and go, you got things wrong. People that are further out there that believe that the archaeological community is trying hard to stifle information, this is proof. Not only do you have an archaeologist saying things that are questionably accurate at times, like this being well established by the fourth dynasty or by in the old kingdom when it was like just become a thing, but you have him winding his opinion in and out with facts and making it look like something it's not, while he complains about somebody else doing the exact same thing just because they don't have the same letters next to their name. I understand that it's different for a journalist to talk about things than it is for an archaeologist to talk about things like that. But the mainstream public might not get that. As a matter of fact, many of them don't. So this really damages that entire perception. Like, here's the thing, man. Like, I reached out recently to archaeologists on Twitter and asked a question to help out with arguing with Potholer 54. And a lot of these guys know exactly the kind of videos I make and know what kind of guy I am. And they help me out anyway. Archaeologists don't have a problem sharing information. There is no cabal to stop it all. Okay, there is no mainstream organized cabal. There are a handful of people out there like Dr. Miano who have a hard on to about for this stuff to the point that they will throw the baby out with the bathwater over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. He's dismissing all of the mysteries, asserting his opinion covers them all up, and it does not do anything except for satisfy his followers and alienate people that would watch that video that have a little bit of knowledge already. If somebody's just watching it and are willing to accept whatever he says and walk away, well then yeah, that's going to work out just fine. But anybody with a little bit of skepticism, a little bit of thought, a little bit of digging into it is going to walk away shaking their head at this, going, this is not a science educator debunking pseudoscience. This is another man just sharing his opinion and calling it fact. And in my opinion, that is very damaging. Anyway, I could completely bitch about this for the rest of my life, but I think I've made my point. Thank you very much for watching this far. Don't forget to like and subscribe. If you don't, I'll upload more parodies. I'm kidding. I'm not going to be doing that again for a very long time, if ever. It's my channel, man. I'll do what I want. Have a good day.